All right, from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, it's People Pleaser. What's up, what's up, what's up? What's up? How you doing out there? It's your boy. Bucket hat on. You know, that's sort of just part of the uniform these days. Cut myself shaving earlier tonight, but now I think I've got that under control. So we're good. We're good to go. It's a late night stream. I don't know who's going to show up here. We're live on TikTok. We're live on YouTube. We're rocking and rolling. I almost called it a night tonight. I was like, maybe I'll just do it tomorrow. But you know what? No, I'm a content creator, baby. It's what I do. I just make more content. More content. Just more and more and more. Live streams. Video version of the podcast. The audio version of the podcast. Videos all day, every day, baby. I don't stop. I'm a hustler. I hustle. Okay? You know how it is. Really what it is, you know what it is? I've got a bunch of new Patreon patrons. There's like 30 new Patreon patrons, 30 to maybe 35 even new Patreon patrons this month. And I'm doing it for them. All right. They're paying for the show and I'm giving them the show. Okay. All these people over here on TikTok are just getting the show for free. Okay. Everybody on Spotify, everybody on Apple Podcasts, they're just getting the show for free. But those Patreon patrons, they're paying for the show and they deserve a show. All right. The new Patreon patrons and the OGs. Shout out to both of them, the OGs and the newbies. I love all y'all. You're the best. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. You heard? Did you hear it? Did you? You can support this show and all the other stuff that I do over there. I massively appreciate the people that do. They really make this stuff possible. I love them for it. Let's keep the positive vibes rolling before we get into some of the less cool stuff I want to talk about. Let's keep the positive vibes strolling along. We're going to do a little review. It's review the review, baby. All right. So the way that this segment works is you go to Apple Podcasts, you rate this show 5 stars, you write a review. I read the review on the show and I review your review back. Simple enough, right? Give the show 5 stars, leave a nice review. You can write whatever you want. You can write literally whatever you want. It doesn't have to be compliments. Usually people write compliments, but I'm telling you, you don't have to write compliments. You can write whatever you want. I read it on the show and I review you back. It works like this. This one is from Brabhammer. The review is titled Simply Delightful. It's a 5-star review. It has to be. Those are the rules. And they wrote, Austin's eloquent, heartfelt sentiments echo my own ideas about life, but are more articulate and well thought out. I love both the episodes where he succumbs to frustration at world affairs and the episodes where he exposes silliness and whimsy. Also loving his music and looking forward to snagging it all next Bandcamp Friday. Burr, burr, burr. Give it all a listen if you're in the mood to learn something about life or just need the solidarity of like-mindedness in these crazy times. What a lovely review. The title of this review was Simply Delightful, and it was simply delightful. This is just very kind all around. And I also really appreciate the shout out to Bandcamp Friday and the fact that you can buy all my music on AustinArcherMusic.bandcamp.com. I really like that they fit that in there. And it didn't feel like it didn't belong in there. They fit it in there nicely. It was a well-written review, well-structured, very kind. And I loved it. Okay? Great review. Let's do another one. This is Caroline the Hat Lady, who wrote an accessible podcast. I like this one. We haven't gotten this take yet, and it's good to hear from someone from this community. This person writes, I'm pretty new to TikTok, in parentheses, where I found Austin, and very new to listening to podcasts. I have a fairly significant hearing loss, and I spend enough time trying to understand what people are saying. But Austin speaks very clearly and records his podcasts live on TikTok and YouTube so I can read his lips. I also appreciate him using captions/subtitles on his TikToks, which sometimes even I forget to do. Lastly, Austin makes hosting a podcast look easy, but the content is very well thought out and thorough. And if you don't laugh at his Bill Maher impression, you have no soul. Fantastic. Fantastic. I'm glad that my efforts to make my content more inclusive, to make this podcast more inclusive, to make the videos more inclusive, are helping. The podcast is a thing where I'm like, I don't have subtitles on the podcast videos on YouTube or on the streams on TikTok. It's really hard to do subtitles and closed captioning for an entire hour to an hour and a half long podcast. So I'm really happy to hear that hard of hearing folks are feeling like my enunciation and my stage training where I learned how to project and enunciate and speak clearly is paying off. And I'm also glad that the efforts that I put into making sure that my videos have captions are appreciated. You know, accessibility is it adds another layer of the effort that you have to put into content creation. When I first started doing this, I had a lot of friends who reached out to me and said, like, what are you using for captions? Like, how do you do your captions? Because that's my least favorite part of making the video. It takes so much time. And I was like, I literally am writing them all out. It takes a lot of time. And when I was first making videos on TikTok, I was writing out all of my own captions because I didn't like TikTok's version of doing it. I sort of color-coded captions for the different characters. Then the editing software that I use started offering captions, and I still have to edit those and make sure that the wording is right, but it's a little bit easier than how I was doing it before. But it's a whole extra part of the process, and it does mean extra work. And sometimes that's what inclusivity and accessibility means, is that you're going to have to put in a little more effort, and that's how that works. So I'm glad that this person appreciates it and that it works for them. Thanks for that review. If you want to be on Review the Review, again, go to Apple Podcasts, give this podcast a 5-star review, and leave your review. I'll read it on the show, and I will review you back. Okay? Let's do another one of our new favorite segments. Let's do a little down, the Bad Take Brigade. So I've got the really cool sound drop for Review the Review. I don't have a sound drop yet for the Bad Take Brigade. It's a newer segment, but you heard the Review the Review sound drop. So you've got an idea of how cool the Bad Take Brigade sound drop is going to be when I get it sorted, right? It's the Bad Take Brigade. It's where we look at all the bad takes of the week, and we try to pick one to hone in on and sort of go in on why it's particularly a bad take. There's always, in a week's time, in the current political climate, there's always, especially with what's going on with the SCOTUS decision and with the January 6th hearings, there's always a deluge of bad takes. So it's kind of fun all week long to think, like, who's it going to be? And this week, it's Josh Hawley. Did you see this clip from Josh Hawley? Just this clip where he was trying to pull one over on Berkeley Law Professor Kiara Bridges? Kiara Bridges was using the phrase "people with the capacity for pregnancy" while talking about Roe versus Wade, and Josh Hawley thought he had a great opportunity to ask a really bad faith, smug question. Let's listen to Josh Hawley's bad take.
But before I do, I just want to clear one thing up. Professor Bridges, you said several times, you've used a phrase, I want to make sure I understand what you mean by it. You've referred to people with a capacity for pregnancy.
Oh, God, if you could see his face. If you could see his face when he says that, he's so excited. He's so excited about, like, ooh, I got him. You've referred to people with a capacity for pregnancy. Well, I need to keep him going. I need to keep it going. Let's go back a little bit.
Professor Bridges, you said several times, you've used a phrase.
There's a phrase you're using. I want to make sure I understand what I mean by it. It's all bad faith. It's all bad. He knows exactly what she's talking about. From the start of this, he knows exactly what she's doing. He knows exactly what she's talking about, but he plays dumb. Sorry, you're using a phrase that I'm not really sure what the phrase means. Let me just make sure that I understand it correctly. It's all bad faith from the start. From the start. None of it is good faith. Let's listen one more time.
You've referred to people with a capacity for pregnancy.
His face, dude! His face! Oh, would that be women? Would that be women? Let me just make sure I got this correctly. You've referred to people with the capacity for pregnancy. Would that be women? So let's be clear. Right from the beginning, Josh Hawley knows what Kiara Bridges is talking about. He knows that Kiara Bridges is talking about the fact that trans men exist and that non-binary people exist who have uteruses and who have the capacity to become pregnant and who have the capacity to participate or elect to have an abortion. He knows what she's talking about. He's not that stupid. But what he's doing is he's trying to pull a fast one over and expose how silly leftist language is. Like, so what do you mean here when you say people with the capacity for pregnancy? Would that be women? He thinks he's pulling one over. Kiara Bridges is having absolutely none of it. Let's keep the clip rolling.
Many women, cis women, have the capacity for pregnancy. Many cis women do not have the capacity for pregnancy. There are also trans men who are capable of pregnancy, as well as non-binary people who are capable of pregnancy.
Yeah! Oh, that response is so good, though. And it's also like, man, we're always, even when, like, she's got, like, some appropriate snark and bite with it, but she's taking his bad faith question in good faith, and she's answering it. She's saying many people who don't identify as women have the capacity for pregnancy. Trans men have the capacity for pregnancy. Non-binary people have the capacity for pregnancy. We can acknowledge that these people exist without taking anything away from women, is what she's saying. Very eloquent answer to a bad faith question. He wasn't actually asking for the answer. He wasn't looking to learn anything in this moment. He was trying to make a point about how silly leftist language has become. Let's keep it going.
So this isn't really a women's rights issue.
That this impacts women while also recognizing that it impacts other groups. Those things are not mutually exclusive, Senator Hawley.
Dude, we can recognize that this issue impacts other groups while also recognizing that it impacts women. Those things are not mutually exclusive. Like, she's a teacher. She's a professor, and she is taking him to school appropriately. He doesn't really want to be taken to school. He's not asking to learn anything, but she is going to teach him.
Oh, so your view is that the core of this right then is about what?
Oh, his face. His face, dude. His face. It's so bad. It's so bad. His face is
so then your belief is that the core of this issue is about what?
He's such a bad actor, is what it is. He's such a bad actor. He's trying so hard to be put on his best, like, I'm really trying to just understand what it is that you're saying, and holding like a pencil up to his face, like he's really just curious. He's such a bad actor.
So I want to recognize that your line of questioning is transphobic, and it opens up trans people to violence by not recognizing that.
Wow, you're saying that I'm opening up people to violence by asking whether or not women are the folks who can have pregnancy?
Wow, you're saying that I'm opening up people to violence by just asking a simple question? So if you guys follow Good Trouble on TikTok or Instagram, great account, a person who doesn't suffer fools and takes no bullshit and really calls it how he sees it with a lot of people's bad takes on the internet. He recently made a point about a particular conservative TikToker named Victor that he responds to a lot, Victor went to a pro-choice rally and went to that pro-choice rally with the express intent of antagonizing the protesters, of getting in people's faces and shouting in their faces, protect the unborn, and just being a nuisance. He wasn't there in good faith. He was there only to stir up shit and see if he could goad people into getting mad at him. And I mean, I think Victor's actually like genuinely hoping to be attacked in this situation so that he can have pro-choice people behaving badly on camera. He goes to this event with the express purpose of seeing if he can start a fight. And Good Trouble characterized this appropriately as it's that thing that your younger sibling does when you're growing up where they get really close to your face and they go, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you. And they sort of hold their finger in front of your nose and go, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you. And they wait for you to push them or hit them. And then they can tell mom and dad, I didn't even do anything. That's what Josh Hawley is doing right here. That's exactly what Josh Hawley is doing. So Kiara Bridges is accurately saying your line of questioning is transphobic and opens up trans people to violence. And Josh Hawley is playing dumb and going, what? Just by asking a question, I'm opening people up to violence? What do you mean? How so? Again, he's completely aware of what he's doing. He's going, I'm not touching anyone. I'm just asking a question. It's very Tucker Carlson, just asking questions. But it's sort of what the tactic that these people have is, like, they know that because what Josh Hawley is saying here, and Kiara Bridges goes on to say this, but what, I mean, let's listen. Hold on. I'm going to say what I'm going to say after. Let's listen more to the clip, to her response to him going, I'm invoking violence by asking a question. This is her response to that.
So I want to note that 1 out of 5 transgender persons have attempted suicide. So I think it's important.
Because of my line of questioning. Because, so we can't talk about it.
Because denying that trans people exist and pretending not to know that they exist.
I'm denying dangerous. That trans people exist by asking
you
if you're talking about women having pregnancies.
Do you believe that men can get pregnant?
No, I don't think
so. So you are denying that trans people exist?
And that leads to violence?
Yes, he is. Yes, literally. Again, playing dumb. I'm denying that trans people exist by asking if women have he's now changing the parameters of what the question he was asking was. He's saying, he's shifting it. It's very disingenuous. He's saying, I'm denying that trans people exist by asking if women have pregnancies. That's not the question you were asking. You even said earlier that you're asking if only women can have the capacity for pregnancy. What you're saying in that instance is that you do not believe that the identities of trans men are valid. You see trans men as women. You see non-binary people who have a uterus as women. So you are very explicitly denying the existence of trans people and non-binary people, and that absolutely does open up trans people and non-binary people to violence, both from bigoted communities that hate them and that also feel like Josh Hawley does, people who follow Josh Hawley and listen to his words, and violence toward themselves. Trans people who are raised with this kind of rhetoric, non-binary people who are raised with this kind of rhetoric, being told by people in positions of power that their identities are not valid, are not real. Okay, it absolutely does open them up to violence. Kiara Bridges is being very patient and clear that his line of questioning is denying their existence, which is a line of questioning that we know opens them up to violence. And he's playing dumb about it and going, I'm asking, we can't have a conversation about it. It's literally, I'm not touching you. And then when the person pushes back going, I was just asking a question. He knows exactly what he's doing. They all know exactly what he's doing. He's dog whistling to his transphobic base. He's letting them know, I'm with you. I don't think that trans men are men. I think they are women. I think they are women who are confused, women who are mentally ill. So when he says, is it transphobic to ask the question, or is it invoking violence to ask the question, can only women get pregnant? The answer to that question is yes, it is. It is transphobic. It is opening up trans people and non-binary people to violence to ask that question. Next question, please. So, okay, that's Josh Hawley's bad take. I don't want to spend too much more time on it. But there is this, what's characteristic of the right now that is in this clip and in this bad take. I mean, I saw a tweet earlier today from somebody that was like, how come the left can't say women? So like the disingenuous mischaracterization of the conversation. Like, how come the left can't say the word woman? As though that's ever been a thing. Like, I don't know. Here I am. Woman. I guess I'm not on the left. I guess I must not be, because I guess apparently we can't say it. That's never been the thing, ever. It's a mischaracterization of the argument. There is a popular trans-exclusionary radical feminist talking point that the acknowledgement of the existence of trans people, the acknowledgement of the reality of trans experiences and trans identities, contributes to the erasure of women who were assigned female at birth, of cis women. It is a lie. Just like Kiara Bridges said, acknowledging trans men, non-binary people, trans women, acknowledging these other identities in no way erases or takes away from the plight and the lived experience of women. That talking point is meant to galvanize hatred and resentment toward the trans community, a historically marginalized community. And it is intended to galvanize one marginalized community against another, to tell one marginalized community, this other marginalized community is taking away from your cause. They are taking away from people paying attention to your cause. Nobody who recognizes trans identities as being valid thinks that the historical marginalization of women is less important because they're also including the intersection of trans identities and non-binary identities when they talk about people who are capable of pregnancy. It's just a false talking point. It's a popular turf talking point. The idea is to galvanize women, liberal women, feminist women, against trans people. That is the idea. It's to say that these people are taking away, they're appropriating your strife, your struggle, and all they really are is men playing dress up and women playing dress up. That's all they really are. They're mentally ill people who need to be on medication. It is intended to degrade these identities, to invalidate these identities. So let's not get it twisted. I'm really glad that Kiara Bridges didn't take any of Josh Hawley's shit and spoke truth to him in that moment. Let's move on to a brand new segment. We're almost to the main meat of the show. We're almost through our segments. I got a brand new quick segment. This one's going to be lightning quick. In the interest of being fair and balanced, I can do that. Okay? Your boy can do that. I had John DeLynn on the show last week, and he's a much more fair and balanced podcast host than I am. You probably heard that on the show, that he was being very, very fair and considerate in the way he talks. It's no surprise. It's no secret to anybody that follows my content and watches my show what my opinions are and what my stances are and which side of the political spectrum in America currently I think is trying harder to do the right things. it's no secret. But in the interest of being fair and balanced, I'm offering a new segment called Bad Take Brigade Redemptions. Okay? So these are former people who have been featured on the Bad Take Brigade, and I'm giving them a redemption for having a decent take, even if it was accidental. So this take, I was not expecting. I was never expecting to ever see a tweet or a take from this person that I would ever, ever agree with. I think that it's sort of an accident. I think that what she's actually saying with this tweet is like the reasons behind why she thinks what she's saying in this tweet probably differ from the reasons I think this. But this tweet in and of itself, with no other context attached to it, from, believe it or not, of all people, Marjorie Taylor Greene, shook me. I'm going to read it to you right now, and be prepared. Be prepared to be shook as I was. Marjorie Taylor Greene tweeted out yesterday, July 12th, "The greatest problem we face as a nation is the dramatic economic shift of our grandparents' generation to our children's generation. It is the loss of the ability to live on one income, own a home, and raise a family without debt. This is the destruction of the American dream." I had to read that tweet like 8 times to make sure I wasn't misreading it, to make sure I wasn't missing a word in there. I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe that someone as far right, as radical, as extreme, as dug in as Marjorie Taylor Greene was acknowledging that we have a huge problem in this country, which is our economic system is just rapidly failing, and is like the current generations, my generation, Gen Z, are just fucked. We used to have a situation where a single income family could afford a home. Could afford a nice home. A single income family who was working class could provide for a family of five or six or seven. We now live in a situation where single adults like me have a hard time providing for themselves while not owning anything. I don't own a home. I'm not a home. I pay rent for an apartment that is too high. And we struggle with the cost of healthcare, with the cost of everything. Inflation has just continued to go up and up and up and up, and wages have not kept up. It's not hard to see what's happened. And also, like, so that's where I can give Marjorie Taylor Greene credit, is like, hey, kudos to you for pointing it out, for actually acknowledging that, because typically the Conservative Party is the party of hard work and dedication will pay off. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps, stop complaining, stop asking for a handout, and just get to work. That's typically the MO, is like, there's nothing broken here. Don't worry, you know, like, don't, there's nothing going wrong here. You just need to work harder. You need to pull yourself up. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is actually acknowledging that, no, we have failed current generations, that we are not, that wages have not kept up nearly enough with the increase in prices of everything to make it so that people can still take care of themselves in this country, that hard work will actually result in people being able to not only take care of themselves, but a family, and be homeowners and live a prosperous, happy life. We no longer have an economic framework that supports that, that allows for that. We have people working 2, 3, 4 jobs and barely cutting it. And that doesn't work. So the acknowledgement here from her, I just, it was something I never thought I would see in a million years. Now, what I don't think would happen is, I think if you tried, ooh, I'm getting a hat and a mustache over on TikTok, thank you very much for that. What I don't think is, I think if you ask Marjorie Taylor Greene, like, why do you think that is? Why do you think that's happened? It's fair to say that we would fully disagree on why that is. She probably thinks it's the result of too many people looking for a handout somehow, that logic makes sense, that it's like laziness or somehow that's what's contributed to wages not keeping pace with prices. When really what it is it is a direct result of Reaganomics. It is the direct result of trickle-down economics, the idea that the free market should be unregulated, and that corporations and businesses should just be allowed to grow exorbitantly and exponentially, and that we should not get involved with monopolies and trying to break up big business, and that the idea that letting businesses thrive and grow to insane levels in America is good for everyone, that all of that wealth will trickle down to the workers, and that prosperousness at the top will equal prosperousness in the middle and at the bottom. And that just, of course, has not panned out. What it has resulted in is 40 to 50 years of the wealth gap in America just widening and widening and widening exponentially with each passing year. And I don't know that she would acknowledge that. I'm 99.9% positive that she wouldn't. But I had to go ahead and give it up for Marjorie Taylor Greene. I can't believe it. I'm as shocked as you are. I've kind of spent the day sort of just staring into a void and thinking about the fact that I agree with Marjorie Taylor Greene, at least on this one tweet, without any other context attached to it, and coming to terms with that, and sort of just dealing with this new emotional reality that I find myself in, where I apparently am capable of agreeing with somebody on YouTube. R. Taylor says she wouldn't, she's a dumb ape. I think in response to me saying she definitely wouldn't agree with my reasoning on why that's happened. And he says, and you are being an idiot now. I agree with you. Like, I'm not, let me be really clear. I'm absolutely not saying, I am in no context, no way saying that I think Marjorie Taylor Greene is smart or good at her job, or like a person who we should take more seriously because of this one tweet. I think if you asked her a follow-up question, why do you think that is? Why do you think our economic system is failing? Her answer would be ridiculously stupid and bad. I don't think that this means that she's actually like smart, or that we've all got her wrong, or that we should all cut her some slack. I'm just saying that I was shocked to read that tweet and be like, damn, Damn. Yeah, somebody else, Jeff Barker in the comments on TikTok or on YouTube says, broken clock, my dude, broken clock. Exactly. That's really what it is. It's just like everybody gets one from time to time by accident. And I wanted to go ahead and in the interest of fairness and balance, I wanted to go ahead and acknowledge that from Marjorie Taylor Greene. Okay, let's move on. Let's move on to the main meat of the show. I want to talk about the images from the James Webb Space Telescope. All right? You've seen these videos. They're all over TikTok right now. They're all over the internet. Twitter's going nuts about it. Everybody's freaking out about these images. There's people zooming in on the images and showing you, like, let's go all the way in, then let's go all the way out. They're really mind-blowing to, you know, like, Hank Green's got great videos about him where he's explaining that, you know, sort of the bent parts of light that we're seeing are actually some of the earliest formed galaxies in the universe's history, and that the light that we're seeing from them is actually coming from the past and bending around the objects that are currently in place that are in front of them, and that light is warping space and bending around those galaxies, and that's why we have these, like, bent streams of light. It's really fascinating. It's fascinating. It's beautiful. It's awe-inspiring. It's stunning. But what I want to address is the fact that for a lot of people, what I'm seeing online is that it's also sort of, like, existentially galling. It makes people feel, the word that keeps coming up is small. I feel very small. And sometimes people will even attach this word to it. I feel very small and insignificant. They'll attach that word to it. But even when they say, oh, geez, this makes me feel really small, it feels like the word insignificant is implicitly attached to the feeling that they are expressing. Oh, this makes me feel really small. In the same way that if you were having a problem with a person you're in a relationship with and you said, when you say that, it makes me feel really small, what you would be saying when you say that is, you're making me feel really insignificant. You're making me feel like I don't take up a prominent enough part in your heart, in your mind, in your life. You don't prioritize me. You're making me small. You're making me feel less significant, like I matter less. And I want to address that. I want to address that. I had an idea, a thought, an epiphany when I was looking at these stunning images from the James Webb Space Telescope. And that is that I think what we should be getting from these images is not the conclusion that, oh my God, I'm so small and insignificant, but the conclusion that size is very much an illusion in the same way that time is. Size is a unit of measurement that is relative to the person perceiving it or the entity perceiving it. All size is relative. Just like time is a unit that we use, it's a made-up measurement that we use to work out how we experience reality. We experience reality in a linear fashion where it is always the present moment. It is not 5 seconds ago. It is not 5 seconds from now. It is now. That is how I perceive my existence. And I use this idea of a flowing timeline when really it's always just all happening all the time. But I have to perceive it in a linear fashion and create this unit of measurement. Size, you could say, is functionally different because, like this capo that I'm holding in my hand, you can't see it if you're on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, but the people on TikTok and YouTube can see it. It takes up less space than I do. It has less mass than I do. It is smaller than me. And that seems really concrete. But everything in space is smaller than something else, as far as we can tell. Everything. 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 I'm going to say that again. Everything in space is smaller and bigger than something else, as far as we can tell. Images from our most powerful microscopes are just as fascinating and interesting as images from this telescope. And that's the reality, that the universe going down, looking at things going down with our most powerful microscopes, is just as revealing and overwhelming at the just sheer volume of particles and things that make up the planet that we are standing on, going down, 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 down into universes of just expansive space of smaller and smaller and smaller pieces. It's just as fascinating going down as it is out. And what it really, I think, boils down to is that what we should get from these images is that our size doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We are perceiving ourselves as so small in relation to that photo. What we should be seeing on that photo is that we are that photo. Those photos. We are not separate from them. We are them. We are an essential part of those photos. You are just as much a part of those photos as any other thing in the photo. Doesn't matter the size of it. Doesn't matter. I'm going to say that again, too. I'm going to repeat that again. You, sitting where you are, either listening to this on your headphones, taking a walk in your car, or watching this on a live stream on TikTok or YouTube, you are just as much a part of those photos as any other thing. As all of the galaxies, all of the nebulas, all of the dying stars, all of it. You are just as much here in the universe, a part of it, than anything else in those photos. And your size bears no weight on your significance to those photos, on what you mean in the grand scheme of all of it. Think of it this way. If we found out from a super powerful telescope that we thought the universe was infinitely expansive, but we actually found out that it has walls and a limit, and it's roughly the size of, it's roughly just bigger than the Milky Way galaxy. That's how big it all is. That's everything. Everything is just bigger than the Milky Way galaxy. Earth would still be, relative to that size, incredibly small. Relative to that size, very, very small. But relative to what we actually know the size of the universe to be, we would be suddenly larger. Would that impact your life in any way, knowing that you take up a relative larger portion of the overall whole of the known universe? Would it impact the significance that your life has, the significance that your relationships have, the significance that your passions have to you, the significance that you feel when you listen to a beautiful song or have an emotional experience with a piece of art? Would that lessen the impact? Somewhere along the way, and I don't know what causes this, we got the idea to assign value to size. We give existential and moral value to size. Bigger is better. Bigger car, bigger house, bigger boat, bigger plane, bigger phone. That's a big, we used to have phones that were smaller. We wanted them smaller. Then it was like, no, I want it bigger because I got a screen on my phone now. Bigger. Everything bigger. Bigger muscles. Bigger is better. Taller. Somehow. I mean, discounting fat phobia. We're pretty fat phobic in this society. But that's usually that there are certain cultures in the world that aren't as fat phobic as Western society is. But we've assigned value to size. R. Taylor is pointing out an obvious joke, bigger cock. Yeah, I think I'm deliberately avoiding that one. It's like, yeah, okay, I'm talking about size. Size doesn't matter. This could be a big, huge allegory of me saying why it's not a big deal that my dick is small. That's the punchline of all this. And that's why it's not actually a problem that my dick is pretty normal sized, okay? I talk about how size doesn't actually matter in the cosmic sense and how it doesn't actually weigh in on significance. And the whole reason is because I'm trying to make an argument for why people should accept my dick size. My parents are going to love this part of the podcast. I can already tell. I'm excited to hear their feedback on that. But yeah, I thought I had, I was struck with that, that, what I want to get from those photos is not a feeling of, oh, in that, in the grand scheme of all that, I'm imperceivable. I'm less than dust. I'm nothing. I'm nobody. I couldn't matter less. And instead go, my size truly bears no importance on my significance to that, to those photos. And as far as we know so far, we're the only part of any of those photos that's having an experience like this one, that's having living entities, conscious entities, being part of the universe, experiencing itself through a conscious experience, through a conscious life cycle. As far as we know, we're the only ones doing that. It's a safe bet that there's lots of other places that are doing that as well when you look at how big everything is. But it's still probably rare. It's still probably like a lot of that stuff that we're looking at is just jumbles of things that aren't having an experience like this one. So if anything, we're like a pretty significant piece. We're like one of the, we're one of the smart little dots. We're one of the self-aware little specks, little less than a speck, you know? I always think about it this way, like the smallest thing that we can observe with our microscopes is like a quark, right? We go down and down and down and down, and we get down to like these building blocks of quarks. And I always think about it this way. If you could put yourself in an Ant-Man suit and shrink yourself down to the size of that quark and be smaller than it, let's say you could shrink down so that the quark was like the size of your house. Suddenly the quark is not the smallest thing around anymore. You are smaller than it now. And it is, relative to you, rather large. And if you brought a microscope with you and looked at it, what do you think the odds are that it would be like all one thing? That it'd be like, nope, that's it. Like, you bring a microscope down here, you look at it, and it's just, that's it. It's just, it's the essential building block of everything. It's just that. It's just, it is no, you can't go deeper than that. I think it's actually a pretty safe bet that if you brought that microscope down with you and looked at it, it would be made up of all kinds of other things that just go down and down and down. And when you're down closer to things, they have a different relation, size relation to you. So we don't spend a lot of time thinking about these things. We don't think about microbes and bacteria and quarks and atoms and nucleuses and all this stuff. We don't really spend a lot of time thinking about them, but without them, we wouldn't exist. They are essential to our existence. We need those building blocks. They are just as much a part of us as a slice of pizza that you eat, of like something that you can see and hold, as people that we have relationships with, that we, the things that we can observe and that we actually spend time thinking about. We need those little teeny tiny pieces. They're all just as equally weighted in the ultimate overall tapestry of what the universe actually is, bringing us to the realization that, like, we are not separate from the universe is not separate from us, we are the universe, we are not smaller than the universe, we are not bigger than the universe, we are the universe. And that's where I land at, like, size is an illusion, because we aren't smaller or bigger than any of it, we are it. Patrick Kennedy says, the fact we all exist at all is significant given how much exists. Exactly. The fact that we're here at all is insane. He also says physics behaves significantly different at different sizes, size scales too. Totally. Yeah. So let's go over to the comments now. That's sort of what I wanted to say about that. Sort of a message of hope of like, don't feel small. Don't feel insignificant. Feel huge, actually. Understand that you are an integral part of those giant photos. Steggy Stories on TikTok says, light years as a distance measurement is an incredibly tough thing for us to comprehend. Totally. The idea that what a light year is is a distance where it takes light that far, it takes light a year to travel that far. And knowing how fast light travels, it gives you an idea of how far that distance is. I mean, it is true that, like, the size of everything relative to us and where we are here is unimaginably huge. I think I'm just more saying, like, what that should do when you see all that is make you realize, like, oh, yeah, like, it's just, it just goes out and out and out and in and in and in, and I'm somewhere along that scale. My relative size is somewhere, it fits somewhere in there, and I'm just as much a part of it as anything else is. As an asteroid floating through space, as a supernova, a star going supernova, as a black hole, I am just as much a part of it as anything else is. Miss Soup One says, I feel like humanity collectively did something huge, and I'm lucky to see it. I think that's a great perspective. It is cool. Hank Green said that in one of his videos, that he's like, it's one of the coolest things we've ever done. We're all immensely lucky to get to see it. And we are. We're seeing stuff that humans going back hundreds of thousands of years, all the way back to the origin of upright thought and upright hominids, would have killed to see images like this. Would have their brains would have exploded. And we also live in a society and a culture of like so much and so much excess that these images do have the, I think, a tendency to sort of also kind of be received in a lackluster way. And we should definitely be looking at them with like an awe and a reverence of like, wow, how cool that we did that. That's really cool. Steggy Story says, my take is that it can also work in the reverse, down to the atomic scale. Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was saying that our most detailed images from microscopes are just as interesting from our most powerful microscopes are just as interesting as the images from our most powerful telescopes. So for sure. My mom says, all this coming from a kid that didn't enjoy science classes. I just didn't enjoy school. I was just bad at it. I don't like being told that, like, I have to do this or that, or that there's, like, a specific way that I have to measure my intelligence. I learn in a certain way, and I've never been good at learning from people just telling me, and I'm supposed to write down notes and, like, retain the information. I can't learn that way. I have to have some kind of hands-on, voluntary application for it, you know? Mr. Uke on TikTok says, the layers of research they have lined up for this bad boy will be blowing our minds for a while. Oh, for sure. There's so much to learn from what they're researching, you know? And it's all so fascinating and so interesting. But it's also something, too, that, like, you are under no obligation to learn about. Because, again, it doesn't actually have any bearing on your significance. And the importance of your relationships and the importance of like your life and the events of your life. People often, when they hear about stuff like this, they're like, oh, nothing in my life matters. None of the stupid stuff I care about matters. And it's like, no, that's not true. That's not true. This stuff is interesting to learn about. It's fun. It's interesting to know more about where we are and what is happening out there. It's cool to see how smart our species has become and how much we've been able to learn through just like math and like an understanding of physics and stuff. And also like understanding that we know that the more we know, the more we know so little. But it's fun to learn this stuff. And it's really cool to examine how intelligent we've become. But at the end of the day, like, you're still just going about your life. You're still trying to show up for the people in your life and be a good sibling and be a good child and parent and partner and, you know, coworker and things like that. So Leslie Knight 30 says, everything in quotations matters. It's all mass. I was going to try, before I started recording this episode, I was thinking I should try to find some kind of matter and mass pun, and I couldn't find it. So thanks for making the joke, Leslie, over there. I thought I should try to find some way of being like, of course you matter. You are matter. I don't know. What? Sean Cordy on YouTube says, I find no comfort in the nothing matters as a cure for anxiety worldview that some people tout. So this was a big thing in the movie Everything Everywhere All at Once. The nothing matters is a recurring line in the movie where at the beginning of the movie, the daughter character has exposed herself to so much knowledge and so much excess and so much awareness of how big and expansive the universe is that it makes her feel like nothing matters. And it makes her kind of nihilistic and feel like there's no point in anything. And she decides that she wants to create a kind of a wormhole that's going to make the multiverse collapse in on itself and destroy everything, because who cares anyway? Nothing matters. And the movie finds a shift in changing nothing matters from being a nihilistic, hopeless slogan into something more positive. And so what Sean is saying here is that he finds no solace in that idea. And I think that's totally fine. I think you can find your existential solace however you can, in whatever way works for you. But I think that what is useful about that reframe is understanding that, like, a lot of the things that we spend a lot of time being afraid of. I was on TikTok the other day. A lot of the things that we spend a lot of time stressing about, being afraid of, being sad about, don't actually hold as much weight as we think they do. And that we can sort of free ourselves from some of that. So I think that that's what it means. And that's what the reframe is. And I'm going to go back to what I was saying. Sorry. I was on TikTok the other day and a video came up where they were interviewing people who were close to my age who were terminally ill, who had terminal illnesses, and they were asking them about how do you feel and what is your experience like right now. And watching this video, I was overwhelmed with a sense of dread. I just all of a sudden was like, oh, I hate watching this video. I don't like the way this is making me feel. I thought instantly, what would I feel like if I went and got some tests done and the doctors told me, oh, you've got this thing and you've got months left to live. You've got to go spend time with your loved ones and sort of just like get ready for the end of your life. At this point in my life, in my mid-30s, how would I feel if that happened? And I was just overwhelmed with this feeling of like, oh, I'm not okay with that. I'm really not okay with that. I'm not ready for that. I reject that. I was filled with fear and a feeling of, oh, I don't know if I'm ever going to be ready for that. A feeling of, oh my God, I'm really realizing right now that I don't want to die, that I don't like the idea of having to accept at some point in my life that I'm going to die. And then I sat and I thought, like, well, what is that? What is behind that? How come and I know that this is a very human thing, the fear of death, the fear of finality, the fear of not knowing what comes next and what is after death, if anything is after death. It's a very common human fear. And I was trying to sort of get into it and not hide from it and not run from it and going, okay, so, all right, I'm really afraid of dying. And then I thought maybe this could be underpinned in a lot of my anxiety, the anxiety that I experience on a day-to-day basis, in a lot of my panic disorder, this sort of underlying pulsating fear of the finality of death, that's sort of running through everything. And I started thinking, what is behind that? Why do I fear death so much? And I thought, I think what it is I've always operated with this idea that I'm here for some purpose. I have some purpose that I'm here to carry out, and I haven't done it yet. I have more to do. I have more to achieve. I have more to see, more to become, more growth to do. And basically, it's this idea that I am not enough yet. I have not achieved enough. I have not become good enough. I have not learned enough. I have not grown enough to accept that my life has run its course yet. And I think for a long time, I've used that fear to motivate me to keep moving forward. This idea that my best days are ahead of me, that my best work is ahead of me, that my most important contributions to existence and to the human species are ahead of me, and that I can't die yet because I haven't done those things yet. And I realized that what I was doing is constantly reaffirming to myself on a daily basis that I am not enough. And that the sum total of my experiences up to this point in my life are not enough, that they are not good enough to qualify for a worthwhile life, for a worthwhile trip through consciousness and existence, that I have yet to accomplish enough to make my life matter, to give my life weight. Nothing matters. The reframe on nothing matters can free me of that. It can make me realize that A, I am enough. I always have been enough by virtue of my existence, by virtue of being a part of that massive tapestry that you see in the JWST photos. I don't need to do anything or be anything or accomplish anything to earn my spot here. I am simply here. My experiences that I have had up to this point are valid and beautiful, and they have made me who I am, all the good and bad. And all of my fear that I can't die, I can't go yet because I'm supposed to do something, actually doesn't matter. Because even if I manage to achieve some kind of amazing legacy, I manage to achieve I become an incredible human being, a human being other people talk about for years after I die. Let's say that I'm remembered for 3 centuries after I die, 300 years after my death, people are still talking about the contributions that I contributed to the species. At a certain point, it will fade away like everything. Everything ends. Everything ends. Everything has a beginning, middle, and end. Everything dissipates and flows and evolves and becomes something else. That is the nature of the universe. So understanding that even the existential dread of like what we're doing to the planet right now, I absolutely think that we should do everything we can to counteract climate change and to fight for the survival of our home here and our planet. I absolutely believe that that is a moral imperative that we should fight for and that that's a good thing to fight for. But the reality is like, what is the end goal? We are fighting against death. We are refusing to accept the death of the species. We want humanity to exist. We want it to go on. But like, we have to accept as a species that it's going to end at some point. Even if we manage to extend humanity's lifespan another 300,000 years, 500,000 years, another 1,000,000 years, at some point, surely, something will happen. A mass extinction event, an asteroid hitting the Earth, something. We'll expand out, we'll colonize other planets, and we'll get in a war with some other species, and they'll wipe us out. Something, at some point, we will be extinguished. And this thing that's happening, this impermanent thing, this impermanent miracle that we are experiencing, will be no more. What knowledge of that can do, rather than making me feel nihilistic and going, oh, I guess all the things that I fight for, all the things that I work for don't matter, it can make me understand that where most of my fear comes from, where most of my anxiety comes from, where most of my discomfort comes from is this idea that I have to do something to make it all worthwhile. I have to do something to make it all matter. I have to do something to make my life matter. I have to do something to make humanity being a thing matter. I have to help the species go on somehow. I'm not accepting the nature of how this process works. I'm not accepting the fact that it's going to come to an end. So I think that when people say nothing matters, and in that reframe, they're not really saying that like nothing matters. They're not saying that like the love you feel for your family or your friends or your relationships, your passion for your art, they're not saying that doesn't matter. They're saying all the stuff that you stress about, all the stuff that you dread, all the stuff that keeps you in fear, none of that matters. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It frees you up to actually just experience this experience while you have it. I don't know. That's what I think. Sean followed that up by saying, but I do like knowing that the things that often seem so important, embarrassing, et cetera. I think I said et cetera right then, and that is not something I say. I do not say et cetera. I say et cetera. I don't know why that came out of my mouth. I say et cetera, let's get it straight, are only temporary and just a blip on the radar in the grand scheme. Yeah, it's just, and again, it's not that it's small and insignificant. It's just that it's taking away your attention on the things that actually do matter. the things that actually make your life full and beautiful. If that makes sense. Gratitude Spark over on TikTok says, your passions are a part of everything ever contributed. Yeah. Just like you're a part of that photo. You are. Nobody can take that from you. Nobody can take that from you. You're a part of those photos. You're in those photos. And you are just as significant of a part of it as anything else. Your impermanence, the fact that your life has an expiration date, as far as we know, that we don't know what happens next, does not. And the fact that, like, the span of a human lifetime is so relatively short compared to the span of the life of the universe. Length, size, none of this takes away from the value of you being here and having this experience. You don't need to worry about that. That doesn't matter. I think I'm going to leave it there. You know? I don't think I can do much more than that. We got a lot of good comments. If you're on TikTok, hang out. We'll hang out for a little while longer, for a little linger longer, for a little more conversation. YouTube, thanks for hanging out. Thanks for the comments. Thanks for the comments on TikTok. I really appreciate everybody contributing. Yeah, I feel good about that. I feel solid about that, about some late night content, about a little late night stream. Yeah, thanks for being here. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. You can listen to my music on Spotify or Apple Music. You can support me at Patreon, patreon.com/austinarcher. Shout out to the Patreon patrons. We love you so much. You're the best. Yeah, I think that's everything. All right. Have a good one. See you next week. Love you so much. Bye-bye. Trying to do and say the things that make everyone okay is a way.